on it, I think it's self-explanatory. I think it goes without saying that the child, if their child testifies, would be subject to cross-examination. My recommendation would be to leave it in. Page 3, lines 13 and 14 of the Senate bill. Again, we were silent on that issue. This is one of the issues that Representative Brian was getting at. There is new language in here that talks about corroborative evidence of the act of sexual conduct, and the Senate bill says, and the defendant's participation in the conduct, which actually I actually misspoke. I suppose a witness could, if they observe something, could talk about the defendant's participation. But that is new language as well. Page 3, page 3, lines 16 and 17, and of the defendant's participation in the conduct was not in the House bill.
My question would be, what's participation? Let's say an adult was coercing some sort of sexual conduct wherein the defendant was not
I think a court would interpret that as participation.
Narrow and exclude only direct contact.
Shall I continue?
We're listening. I'm in your ear.
Okay.
Listening so much.
Page 3, lines 16 and 17, the Senate bill speaks to the statements being given to the defendant no later than 15 days before trial. The House bill talks about sufficient notice to adequately prepare. Again, the House bill is a little bit softer by just saying it has to be sufficient notice. They said no less than 15 days. Page 3, line 22 states that the examination shall be conducted in the presence of attorneys. This was actually a question that came up to this committee regarding this bill. There was an assumption in the bill that the attorneys would be present. This just clarifies that. Now, the House bill that this committee passed out said that a child could be deemed unavailable if the child was unable to communicate about the offense because of fear or other similar reason, or is substantially likely to suffer severe emotional trauma from testifying. That was in addition to having lack of memory or being currently incompetent. The Senate bill is silent on those two conditions, the condition of fear and the condition of emotional trauma. Again, it's no comment.
It's what? It's what?
It's, I think it makes it easier. I think that the House bill, by adding an additional criteria, would make it easier to meet these criteria than the Senate bill's criteria. And allow a child to testify. And the last change is on page 3, lines 23 to 25 of the Senate bill. Makes it very clear that the purpose of the examination is to assist the court in making its findings. It seems to me that that's self-evident, but it certainly clarifies that that's the purpose of what you're doing this. The language is the purpose of the examination shall be to aid the court in making the findings. It seems obvious, but that's in the Senate bill. So the two big differences, I think, are the age or the child versus prosecuting witnesses, licensed mental health care statements, and resolving the difference between sufficient notice and 15 days, and whether or not this committee wants to add back in the issue of trauma or fear of testifying. That's all there for you.
Well, committee. I like to have that in there. I'm not trying to jock the Senate around, Corey. I'm not trying to wreck your day, but I'd like to put it back to put that in this version because. Representative. I mean, how am I going to, how should this be exactly worded so that we can have direction? Representative Bryan's moving that
we insert language.
We insert language, where is it?
It's page 3, lines 29 and 30 of House Bill 2367 into the appropriate location in Senate Bill 275A.
Okay, Representative Bryan so moves. Is there objection to Representative... I'd ask Cory, I know she's going to object, but, you know. Is there objections to Representative Bryan's motion? Representative Clark, you know what we did? We just talked about the trauma, so I'm not trying to distract you as you talk to John Powell. Thank you very much. Any objections? Now, let's go to... I'll just ask him about... What's this? No?
Well, you want to start at the top of the list, or you want to...
Yes, if you would, please. I should have done that. I'm wrong.
The first issue is whether or not the committee wants to reinsert the licensed health, mental health care statements that we added in initially.
I'm not going to lead with that one. Anybody want to do that?
That's in the House bill. It's on page 1, starting on line 17 of the House bill. The Senate bill is silent on it.
Was it, Mr. Chairman, was that part of sub 5?
The way that, to refresh the committee's memory, there was testimony that a lot of statements are made to social workers and psychologists in treating these childs as opposed to physicians, and that it would be beneficial if those statements could be utilized as well.
And the Senate took it out, right?
No, the Senate never saw it. This is a clean Senate bill. Senate's never seen it.
What did we do, though?
We added it. It was not in the original House bill either. The committee added it in.
The Senate has been...
I don't know if it was ever presented to the Senate.
Let's put it in.
Chair?
Yes, Cory?
Cory Streisinger, for the record. It was presented to the Senate, but there was no substantial testimony presented. It was just simply given to them by the organization, and they didn't... So the Senate decided not to move on it because there was no compelling showing made.
Cory, you had a comment.
I suggest we put it in.
Ryan's shaking his head. He wants it in. Representative Clark, how do you feel? Representative Clark, do you know where we are? I mean, I'm worried about you. You got a daze in your face. Look, are you dazed or what?
No, you're talking about putting fear and trauma back in, right? No.
Excuse me?
You're still talking about putting fear and trauma in?
No, sir. See, I was right.
Putting fear and loathing in.
No, we're beyond that. We are talking about including...
fear and loathing.
He's worried about what his speech he gave on smoking.
We're talking about this.
Yeah, but I want him to hear.
What do you want?
We're talking about. Could I have your breakdown of the differences, please? Because that's where you've done the nice job. It's not here either.
What? It's right there.
Licensed mental health care provider. No, is that right?
That's what we put in. Actually, right. I'm going to change it, though.
We added a group of people.
We added in psychologists and clinical social workers.
Remember, that was in our bill. The Senate did not put that in their bill, and now we're hearing from some of our members they'd like to go put it back in. They'd like to put it in this bill that we felt.
Chair, as I understand what the committee is doing, it's sort of piece by piece, making the Senate bill our bill.
Well, we're making the Senate bill a better bill.
I understand that.
We're improving.
But you got, I'll let you think that if that's what we get a yes vote on you, because that's, and now we're trying to decide whether or not, what are you going to do now?
Well, I have a recommendation, however. There was some discussion when the committee first heard this bill about who these statements would be made to.
Right. Most likely made to. Yeah.
Most likely that's made right. to. I think that the committee can consider broadening it slightly.
Right.
To include psychotherapists as defined in the evidence code.
Yes.
We've had a lot of discussion in the Natural Resources Subcommittee, and I think based on my education on that actually using psychotherapists as defined here would be a better definition.
Let me tell you the practical effect of that. Practical effect of that is after, where's John Powell, House Bill something other, which licenses master's level counselors. The practical effect of that is that you're going to create a whole group of people out there who would not have otherwise come in under licensed mental health care providers. It's a better provision because you're getting more people reporting.
Okay. Representative Clark moves. Representative Clark moves, Learning Council.
Yes, to a psychotherapist.
You're not communicating with me.
I am. I'm listening.
Representative Clark moves to add...
Psychotherapist. My wife is. Therapist.
He wants to add this statement in, but changing licensed mental health care providers to psychotherapists as defined in ORS 40.230. I know exactly what he's doing.
Right. Is that a, you understand what you just
did? I understand what I just did.
All right. Representative Clark, Menace, do you understand what you just did?
Mr. Chair?
Oh, Corey wants to speak.
Am I permitted to offer a comment?
Oh, sure.
I believe the reason there wasn't much enthusiasm on the Senate side was they felt it was already covered by the hearsay, the major part of the bill. That is, the major part of the bill lets in hearsay statements made by the child to other people, including psychotherapists or anyone else. If the statement is made by the child and meets these criteria, there isn't a need to talk about who it's made to. If the intent of the amendment is to talk about other kinds of statements by other kinds of people, not children who fall into this bill, to psychotherapists, then there's a need to put it in. But otherwise, it's somewhat duplicative, I believe, was the feeling over on the other side.
So what about that statement? I mean,
I would disagree. That's not what they testified when they were first here. But I think that
you know what she said?
She said, and it's basically they changed their position from the time that they were here to the time that they went to the Senate.
Mr. Chair, I'm not saying
you don't have to jump through all the hoops.
Said,
see, this makes you jump through the hoops. This is only a hoop jumping process. If you put it in to where it's going in the House bill, then you don't have to jump through any hoops. It comes through automatically. This requires a lot of tests before you can reach the threshold question. And it's my opinion that they do two totally different things.
I'm not sure you heard.
Because he was talking in my ear.
Well, what she said is the Senate did not take this route because they already comprehensively covered in the bill in terms of people who could, hearsay is hearsay.
And I disagree.
Mr. Chair, I think the point counsel's making is that it is covered by the bill, except that the bill, the major portion of the bill, contains a number of procedural tests that have to be met. And by putting it in separately, you wouldn't have to meet those tests if it were a psychotherapist on the receiving end. So I guess the question is, do you want statements made to psychotherapists to have to meet the same tests as statements made to other people?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me just also refresh your memory that the purpose, the way that the psychotherapist exception was crafted, it was statements that were made only for the purpose of diagnosis and treatment, and it was to parallel physician statements. And the intent of it is really different than courtroom statements describing the incident, which is a lot of what the Section 18 amendments are.
Yes, please.
I have a question.
Sure.
Why are we doing this? Why don't we just send a little message over to the Senate and say, we worked on this and we did a nice job, pass it back, please? Why would we do it?
Because they wrote us the same note and said the same thing.
But they didn't, though. They didn't. It's you just got through saying it's structured in a different way. We're sitting here going through all the same stuff again. And what we're doing is trying to end up making it look like.
We're saying, look, we passed out once. It did well on our side. Yeah. We'll just take any of the differences we have, we'll make them go in favor of our House bill, right?
Yeah.
And just send it right back in. Is that right?
Sure.
No? What? You're saying no?
I'm saying no. I'm saying that's not what I said. What I'm saying is send a little message. I don't mean send the message by passing the bill. I mean send a little note and say, pass our good bill, please.
Because it was decided that by the chairs and the subcommittee chairs that there were duplicate bills and certain bills.
But they obviously aren't duplicate bills.
Well, there's no bills. Totally the same.
Well, then they sit there with that bill. We sit here with this bill. And nothing happens. Because if they, it's the point here, that's what I'm saying. The idea we want to become law, right, gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, why don't we do this? What would happen if we did exactly what you say, which is, in fact, amend Senate Bill 275 to make it House Bill whatever.
Yeah, we could do that too.
And send it back to them and say, now get it the second time.
Because there are some things in the Senate bill that I think are worthy of this committee's consideration.
Oh, but then we're.
These that seem to be clarifications put back in the fear of trauma. You want to insert mental health language? If yes, let's do it. And then over on line 5, page 3, victim or prosecuting witness.
Just add this stuff. Add this in, add that in, and send it back. Would be my recommendation.
Okay. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Bryan so moves. Do you know what you just moved?
I moved some concurrence with these
little definitional additions that are depicted in the right column. Of licensed mental health.
Licensed mental health, we're moving fear and trauma and the child substituting prosecuting witness.
Yeah. Child part, is that, do you think, any problem with going with that language?
No, I think that that is just fine.
Okay. Objections to the amendments of the motion? Representative Bryan moves Senate Bill 27.
Clarifying comment, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry to interrupt, but if the intent of the bill is to deal with children who are not victims, that is children who are witnesses, if that was the intent of the last amendment, that change does not do that. Because the language of the bill, and I don't know whether it was in the House bill or not, states that it's with respect to a statement made by a prosecuting witness, which you've now changed to child, who is under 10 years of age, which statement describes an act of sexual conduct performed with or on the child by another. So it has to be the child as victim, not the child as witness, using this language. As I said, I don't know whether that language was in the House bill or not.
It was child as victim, but prosecuting witness limits juvenile court prosecution.
I understand that, but from the discussion, it wasn't clear whether you thought it is still child as victim. I just wanted to make that clear for the record. Excuse me for interrupting, sir.
Further comments or questions on the main motion to send to Senate Bill 275 as amended? No. 275A in gross as amended. I got to say it right. To the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Please call the roll.
Representative Bryan.
Aye.
Moore.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Chair Clark.
Yes. We'll now go to the public hearing. You want to go up the hill again or not?
Sure.
Now I'd like to.
No, that's fine.
Can we go now to the final bill of the day, 562? And let me see who signed up for that, because it's getting late and people are leaving me. I've lost everybody. Paul Snyder. And I would like Pat Callahan and David Fuchs to come up all at one same time if they're still here.
Mr. Fuchs had to leave.
He had to leave. All right. I'm sorry about that.
Here we are.
Thank the committee for being willing to stay because.
Please make note of who still is here.
Excuse me? But you're not signed. Sure, if you. I mean, I don't. Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry. I just didn't have you down. So, sure, if you want to be here, be here. Whoever goes, maybe. I suppose you should go. Well, sure. I don't know. Oh, I'm sorry. There's a note that I didn't get. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see this note. My fault.
I'm perfectly willing to start my 3-day weekend now.
You want to? Yeah. We started ours 2 hours.
Lead off witness, please, Corey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Corey Streisinger, for the record, Governor Goldschmidt's legal counsel, here to speak in support of Senate Bill 562, which is the companion bill to a bill that you saw several weeks ago, Senate Bill 356. That bill dealt with detention after adjudication. This one deals with pre-adjudication detention. I've submitted some written testimony, which I won't go over except in very brief form, given the lateness of the hour. This is a cleanup bill which was drafted for us by Judge Harrell. In response to complaints from a number of juvenile court judges that the governor had received, saying that the current pre-adjudication detention statute is extremely difficult to administer. It's confusing, it's hard to understand, it's hard to follow. It sets up very rigid standards and in many cases ends up with the wrong juveniles being detained pre-adjudication, either some who really should be released, getting detained because they fit within the statutory categories, or some who probably should be detained getting released because they don't fit within the statutory categories. The bill got quite a working over on the Senate side. I'd like to flag the part of the bill that received the most attention because it's also probably the biggest substantive section of the bill. That's subsection 2 of section 1. It begins on page 1, line 22, and goes through page 2, line 11 of the A engrossed bill.
Now, wait a minute. Hold it. You're where?
Bottom of page 1 to the beginning of page 2. It's
all right.
Subsection 2. what this subsection does is permit detention of a juvenile who is likely to cause danger either to him or herself or to the community through commission of new crimes if not detained prior to adjudication. And under current law, that's not a permissible category of detention. The basic ground for detention is fear that the juvenile will not appear at a hearing. And if the juvenile court believes that the juvenile will appear at the hearing but will also commit new crimes, has reasonable grounds to believe that new crimes will be committed before the hearing, that juvenile cannot be detained under current law. And under this bill, that kind of detention would be permitted. A number of changes were made on the Senate side to make sure that that type of detention was not abused. In particular, detention on this basis was limited to situations in which the juvenile was charged with an act which would be either a felony or assault four if committed by an adult. The language was also added to clarify what had certainly been the intent of the original bill, that detention could be ordered only upon a finding that no less restrictive means could adequately protect the child and the community, so that if the releasing the child to parental custody or other types of conditions would be adequate, those means would be used instead. The detention is limited to a 28-day period. It's 28 days instead of 30 because that fits in with the court's week-by-week process. And an additional 28 days can be permitted for good cause or more time with the juvenile's consent, which is likely only in a very complex case when it takes a long time to get ready for the hearing. Judge Harrell asked me to make clear that this bill is not intended to expand or increase the number of juveniles who are detained. It is intended to change the population that is detained to give judges the power to target detention more appropriately. Section 7 of the bill will, I believe, be addressed by representatives from Multnomah County or perhaps by Mr. Snyder. That was added on the Senate side. We're neutral on it, but it deals with some fears that were expressed by some of the counties that this bill and the companion bill might, in fact, cause pressure on county juvenile detention facilities. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Testify before we start any questioning, because I'm on a push now.
Who's going to go next?
Oh, the threesome.
Mr. Chair, I'm Pat Callahan from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I would like to make very brief comments regarding Senate Bill 562 and indicate on the A engrossed version that we are in favor of passage of 562 as someone who's worked with the release hearing statutes in juvenile. It is quite confusing, and I appreciate Judge Harrell's work and his support in getting this bill through the Senate and to this committee. I am concerned, and I want to raise this concern to the members and ask them to consider the possibility of taking a close look at, I'll put it that way, page 2 in section 1 of the bill at line 41. It begins subsection 7. Ms. Streisinger has indicated that this is one of the changes from the way the bill was introduced. There was some concern when I appeared before the Senate. There was some concern about how long children can be held in custody. And there was numerous people who testified that the average length of detention was, and it's somewhere 4 to 6 days, it seems to me, is approximately correct. And there was a question, is there an outside limit? And I told the committee, as I'm sure others did as well, that the outside limit for the time that a child may be detained is established by uniform trial court rule rather than by statute. Then it is evident to me that in a work session, we were not present, this section was added to the bill. I don't want to diminish our favor for this bill, but I do want the committee to know that I'm not in favor of Section 7 for the very reason that it is already covered within the Uniform Trial Court Rule. What it does is allow that a child may be detained for a maximum of 28 days except for good cause shown prior to the expiration of a 28-day period. That is, in substance, the very language that's already contained, that's been enacted, that is the Uniform Trial Court Rule. I want to say it's 11.010. Then it continues, if good cause for continued detention is shown, the period of that detention may be extended by no more than an additional 28 days unless the adjudication is continued with the express consent of the child. I have personally prosecuted several cases where the child has been in detention for more than 28 days. And I did not believe that in any of those instances was it appropriate for the child to have been released sooner, nor would it have been possible, frankly, for us to adjudicate the case sooner than that. And the bottom line is that this section is already covered by the Uniform Trial Court rule, and I see no reason to enact it as part of this bill. Should the committee believe that it should be enacted as part of this statute, this revamping of the pretrial detention, then I would think that some clarification might be in order. For instance, it does not say what the remedy is for a violation of this 28-day rule. Is it automatic dismissal of the petition? Is it automatic release of the child from detention? Is it automatic court review of the continued detention of this child? Is it 28 judicial days or is it 28 calendar days? Does the 28 days run from the date of the preliminary hearing when the child is held and detained, or does the 28 days run from the date when the child is taken into custody? And finally, I would point out that what does this do to the case wherein a victim has suffered some serious injury and is unable to testify at juvenile court? If that person is hospitalized and defense counsel does not consent to telephone testimony, I could see the possibility for miscarriage of justice. Now, it is under this bill possible to go before the court and ask for a good cause extension. I guess what I would say to this committee is I see that as one more administrative step that is already covered within the Uniform Trial Court rules and need not be enacted through this statute. I have no further comments. I know Council Corey talked about Section 7. We take no position on the adding of Section 7 to this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. Both with respect to this bill, Senate Bill 562, and with respect to Senate Bill 356, our association took no position on the substantive issues that were contained in the bills. What we did seek to do was to avoid the fiscal and organizational impacts of crowding conditions on juvenile detention facilities that might be present by enactment of these bills. And so that's the reason why the Senate added Section 7 to the bill. It provides a mechanism by which counties can maintain the population of the facility within the capacity of the facility without having to visit the federal court to do it. So we endorse heartily Section 6 and 7 of the bill and take no position with respect to the rest.
My name is Pat Callahan. Not that precise language, Representative Bryan. The first sentence is essentially the language that is contained in Uniform Trial Court Rule 11 point, I believe it's 010. It does allow for, if good cause is shown, for extension beyond 28 days. The second sentence, where it says essentially that no more than an additional 28 days, that is not part of the Uniform Trial Court rule.
So you're saying that Uniform Trial Court rule does not allow the extension, or the, limit the extension?
What the Uniform Trial Court rule says is that no child shall be held in detention more than 28 days unless there is a showing of good cause, period. Local trial court rule allows that that period of time may be waived and is waived by seeking a waiver of the court rules, which amounts to requesting a continuance in the case.
Chairman, final question here.
You raised several questions about what happens if this is violated, what's a date, you know, definition that we're using and so forth. What's the Uniform Trial Court do with all the same exact questions?
It doesn't.
Mr. Chair, Representative,
I think it's fair to say that the practice has been to count it as calendar days as opposed to judicial days for the reason that Corey indicated.
I would tend to agree that if we're going to elevate this to law, that
Mr. Chair, Representative Bryan, there is a provision in ORS which says in general that periods of days are real days, calendar days, if the period is, I believe, longer than 10 days. So there isn't a need to repeat it in individual statutes.
Not ready to take his life, but go ahead.
Thank you. I'm honored to. No, Corey.
This subsection obviously is important to someone. There's some rationale for having it moderate in the trial court rule.
The question is who? Mr. Chair, Representative Bryan, it was inserted at the specific request of the Senate Judiciary Chair, who felt that if we were going to expand the situations in which detention could be used by statute, that it was appropriate to have time limits by statute. We didn't take a position on it one way or the other, but there was a fair amount of discussion on that. The testimony